Good morning. There's only a week to go in an election which for many can't end soon enough. Today, Neil Conan gives us his take on the latest campaign bombshell. Legal advice usually comes with high fees, even for a simple consultation. A new online program helps to close the justice gap. Michelle Acosta, head of Volunteer Legal Services Hawaii, details the requirements. I'm Beth Ann Kozlovich.
And I'm Chris Vandercook. The band Adagio brings its mix of jazz and neo-soul to the Waikiki stage, and the 6th annual La'akea Family Fall Festival celebrates an alternative approach to therapy for intellectual disabilities. We'll hear from La'akea Foundation Executive Director Andrea Hall Rogers.
That's the conversation for this Tuesday, November 1st. Stay here for all the conversation coming up after this news.
Good morning and welcome to The Conversation. I'm Chris Vandercook. Good morning, Beth Ann.
Good morning.
I think there's little doubt that you'll do better in court if you have a lot of money. Do you think many would disagree with that?
Probably not. But most people don't like, in fact, paying for it. And then there are a lot of people who simply can't pay for it. And we're going to talk about what happens for those who cannot truly pay for legal fees. People who truly can't afford a lawyer or those who may also live very far from one can now access free legal help online. Volunteer Legal Services Hawaii has just launched its online portal for those who meet its income requirements. They'll get a first look with some next steps, and it only takes a trip to the computer. Michelle Acosta is the Executive Director of Volunteer Legal Services Hawaii, and she's in our studio with us this morning. Good morning.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
For a lot of people, this opens up a real avenue to getting some answers. But how that happens and making sure that they meet requirements is what you screen first. Can you take us on that arc of when somebody has a question now, they can ask that question online, but how do you know that they are in fact qualified to be able to take your time? And also, I want to talk to you a little bit about what happens in how you pick those questions that you'll be able to answer and give them enough to be able to walk away with something that feels like it's substantive.
Yes. The Hawaii Online Pro Bono Portal will allow people to register online, go on the website, hawaii.freelegalanswers.org, and actually answer just a few questions. We collect some demographic information as to gender and race. Those are optional. But for the most part, we do ask questions about their income and their assets. So it's not going to be digging deep into qualifications as to where we're looking for W-2s or the income qualifications are really based on what people are going to be giving us through the portal. So for the most part, people will qualify to log a question and post a question if their income qualifies under 250% of the federal poverty guidelines for the state of Hawaii.
So how much is that in real dollars?
So in real dollars, for a family of four in the state of Hawaii, it's going to be a little above $69,000 gross annual income.
So if they meet those requirements and they've done all this first, there are certain questions I would imagine that you simply aren't qualified to be able to answer given those attorneys that you may have who can answer it. Have you already pre-designed this in such a way where that screens out those questions that would be asking you about issues that really would take far more than you can or are prepared to give?
So there is a list of questions. Once you are you're given the go signal that you're eligible income-wise, you choose from a category of questions. Is it family law? Is it a consumer debt collection, tenant-landlord case? And you choose from one of those. You categorize your own question, and then you post a question. Our staff at Volunteer Legal Services Hawaii will be reviewing the questions to make sure that they're categorized properly. So if somebody thought that they had a basic estate planning question, but it was really a complicated trust administration question, the administrator on our end will be able to contact the person who's posting the question and say, you know, this question is really much more complicated. You're not going to get a sufficient answer just based on this portal, which is really geared towards answering basic questions and giving basic legal advice and giving next steps instructions. So the administrator on our end can contact the person who's posting the question and say, I think it's better for you to actually contact Volunteer Legal Services directly so that we can come bring you in either in person or via phone to speak with an attorney one-to-one, or go to Legal Aid Services Hawaii.
The idea is that you're not going to leave anybody hanging.
The idea is that we are trying to get as much information and services to people as possible using all of the services that we currently have in Hawaii.
Right. So in being able to respond to people and asking more, you know, for more details about something perhaps, or just letting them know that you can't do in that narrow scope what it is that they're asking you to do, do you already have in mind, given the fact that you have a certain pool of attorneys here who do give pro bono to you, what it is that you can do to match them to be able to get those answers? Because I would imagine that given the fact that we are a small place, and yes, we think we have lots of lawyers here, but when it comes down to being able to find those to give pro bono services within a certain scope, that might be more difficult.
It would be difficult, and that's why we've only listed several or a few of the legal issues on the portal. So those are designed to match the services that we already provide at Volunteer Legal Services Hawaii, the services that we already are utilizing, volunteer attorneys that we've recruited to provide service. For example, we have a lot of family law attorneys that we utilize because that's the number one need that we find in the state for legal aid services. We are not able to provide everybody all the services that everybody needs in the state, especially for people who can't afford an attorney. So this portal is really designed to mirror the services that we have existing.
Given the fact that this is online and someone doesn't necessarily even get to the point of needing to come in and see an attorney, even if they could, is this becoming more attractive to other attorneys to become involved with this program? Have you been able to use this almost as a recruiting tool?
It's been, yes, we have. It's been a great recruiting tool for a lot of attorneys. As you can imagine, they're all busy. A lot of our attorneys who are in this town are actually small business owners. They're solo practitioners, small firm owners. And so the time that they use to give pro bono may be eating up at the time where they can be billing or bringing in income. So for this online tool, just like anybody who's posting a question, the person answering can do this anywhere, anytime. They can do it at home, during their coffee breaks. So it is becoming a lot more attractive for volunteer attorneys to be able to do this wherever they have the laptop or a tablet or even a smartphone.
Volunteer Legal Services was once a much bigger operation than it is now. With the budget that you have now and those that you're able to do, how are you taking on this program? Are you going to, or have you already sliced off other things that you are doing less well in favor of this one?
So this project became very attracted to Volunteer Legal Services because we want to extend our services, expand our services. But at the same time, our budget is not expanding, like you said. So with this project, we were able to incorporate it to a lot of our core services. Like I mentioned, it mirrors a lot of the services that we already have, and it supplements that. So the funding that goes into this, when we looked at it, didn't really increase the demand for additional staff. Certainly the demand to do outreach so that people understand that this tool is available to them, that takes a lot of footwork and people power to get that out in the community. But for the most part, we're able to incorporate it into the core pro bono services that we already have.
Well, we wish you all the best with it, and for those who will be able to access and get some answers.
Thank you.
Very good program indeed. Thanks so much for coming in.
Thank you.
Michelle Acosta is the Executive Director of Volunteer Legal Services Hawaii, and we'll have a link to their website on ours. You're listening to The Conversation on statewide, member-supported Hawaii Public Radio. It's 8:15. Coming up, building a band in the neo-soul tradition. But first, here's your backyard quiz.
As so often happens these days, what was once old is new again. Although that idea is most prominent in fashion and entertainment trends, we continue to see it in a different realm, medicine. Specifically, there's a surging interest in homeopathic or folk remedies that predate modern Western medicine. Being culturally and geographically isolated for so many centuries, Hawaiians developed unique medicine treatments, incorporating the very flora, the many flora that thrive in the islands. One of these plants has become especially popular as both a preventative and as a treatment for many common maladies. The orange root of this plant is still used to treat inflammation throughout the body, boost the immune system, and prevent sickness. Today, we're looking for the plant's Hawaiian name. Call 941-3689 or 877-941-3689 if you know the answer. And the first one to get it right gets the T-shirt.
Hi, good morning. I'm James McDowell from Grand Illusion. You're listening to The Conversation on Hawaii Public Radio. Find out more about the show at hpr2.org.
When neo-soul came into being a couple of decades back, it was, for many, a welcome alternative to a popular music trend that had become increasingly mechanized. Drum machines instead of real drums, keyboard sequencers that spat out repetitive and robotic patterns. Adagio is a Hawaii-based neo-soul band that generates its sound organically, and you can hear the difference. Joshua Kay is a keyboardist and co-founder of the band, and he's with us this morning. Good morning, Joshua.
Good morning, Chris.
There were a lot of trends in music in the 80s that scared me a little bit. You know, everything was getting pretty mechanized, as that was the term I used anyway.
Right, robots.
Did it sound that way to you?
Yeah, a little bit. The drum machine certainly played a big part in that.
You know, everything depends on what the drummer gives you, but there's something about an organic drum feel that's slightly imperfect that seems to work better, do you think?
I think so, although I must say, with all of the electronic-produced drums, that certainly had an influence on modern drummers also today.
Yeah.
It's hard to ignore some of that dance music that's out there.
Well, it certainly put the emphasis on perfect time, didn't it?
Yeah, sure it did. Really highlights the human quality of a human drummer sometimes.
Well, a lot of as that trend continued, we sort of went from all drum machine rhythms to drum machines enhanced by a real drummer. What were we looking for from a real drummer in a case like that?
Gosh, for a real drummer, you mean influenced by drum machines?
Well, just sort of what does a real drummer add when you've got a pattern that's basically established by a mechanical device like that?
Well, You know, they are a real human being. It's the interactive quality that that gets lost with drum machines. A real drummer is constantly listening and adjusting. It's a conversation with a real drummer.
And that right away tells you what the difference is. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So what were the ideas that led to the founding of this band? What did you want to accomplish?
It was pretty simple. I hooked up with Rhea, who's the lead singer. Mm-hmm. We did a gig duo, and as soon as I started working with her, I thought she just has to have a full band behind her. And so that was really it. She has a way of singing that, you know, unique, and it's really quite amazing. I think the first song we did was George Benson's This Masquerade, and as soon as I heard the way she was singing it, it was inspiring to me, and I had a sort of a rhythmic concept going on that really just matched perfectly with the way she was singing.
How would you describe that rhythmic concept?
Without trying to get too technical, halftime feels. Mm-hmm. A lot of times, even if you have a faster rhythm, you have slower rhythms that are going on at the same time mm-hmm. underneath. They're going on at half the speed. And that's kind of what really helps create the groove, is to feel those slower rhythms, which are happening at mm-hmm. halftime underneath the faster rhythms.
And I think that explains it pretty well. And certainly when you hear the music of, say, Latin America or music out of Africa, you're hearing several rhythms at once, right?
Sure, and a lot of times polyrhythms.
Yeah.
In fact, I've been talking a lot about this with friends and musicians that I know, but I think maybe polyrhythm is really the basis of groove. I think it's always there. You have, and what we're talking about is triplets, bum, 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 bum.
Over a 1, 2, 3,
over,
4.
Over a 1, 2, 3, 4. Those things happening at the same time really kind of make you dance.
Yeah. Well, when you listen to, you know, James Brown Band from the 60s, there's an awful lot going on, right?
Sure.
Played and implied, and there's a whole idea of implying rhythms as well, yeah?
Sure, and it's a perfect example because it's so funky, the way they played. And, you know, I don't think we could ever scientifically figure it out completely.
Yeah.
But it sure is a great example of what it means to have a funky live drummer.
Well, when you hear something like African music or James Brown music, it often seems as if the parts that the different musicians are playing are almost unrelated.
Sure. It's not like everybody's doing the same thing.
Yeah.
They're complementing each other, and they're weaving together.
It's almost an individual part might not make any sense except when everybody else is doing what they're supposed to be doing, right?
Sure, unless you're hearing the whole thing in your head, which is something, you know, of course, as musicians, we have to do a lot.
Well, we've got a little sample of Adagio. We want to just hear a little bit of that to give people an idea of what we're talking about here.
Sure.
Strolling in the park, watching winter turn to spring. Baby, walking in the dark, seeing lovers do the thing. Oh, yeah.
I love that tune, John.
Yeah, me too.
And you took it slower than when we're used to hearing it from Roberta Flack, but there's a strong groove in that at that
there
tempo,
is.
Isn't there?
There is, and I'm sort of moving to it right now,
yeah.
And it's a good example of what I was just talking about.
Yeah.
Even though the tempo is actually a 1, 2, 3, 4, there's a ding, 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 ding.
Yeah, you can hear
it.
And, you know, in a soul ballad, that's exactly what you need to keep it from just sort of sounding limp and kind of give it some rhythmic life.
Exactly. Yeah. It's those subdivisions,
yeah.
The faster rhythms going on underneath the surface that really help make it have a groove.
And you don't have to play it on every beat either.
No, silence is great.
Yeah.
You know, it's when it's happening and everybody's feeling it, whether the music is actually there or not there. Space is wonderful.
Yeah. Space often seems to be something that gets neglected too often in music.
Yeah, I think it's a big pitfall. I mean, musicians are always concentrating on what they're playing as opposed to what they're not playing.
Yeah.
You know, when they're learning their instrument. So it's important to go back and really listen to the whole thing and think, what is the balance of space versus sound that's really going to be the most pleasant experience?
It takes a certain amount of courage to generate silence on the bandstand, doesn't it?
It does, and that was another great thing about Rhea is she thrives in it.
Yeah.
You know, not every singer does. They get really nervous when all of a sudden the band drops out.
Right.
Whereas Rhea, it's just like setting her up to hit the ball out of the park.
Sounds good. Thanks for coming in, Josh. It's
Thanks
great
so
to
much,
talk
Chris.
To my pleasure. Josh O'Kay is the keyboardist and co-founder of Adagio, which performs Sunday evening at the Hawaii Blue Note in Waikiki.
Say Keith Kaneshiro has a penchant for locking up bad guys and not focusing enough on rehabilitation. But it looks like Honolulu will keep its prosecutor, even as he is defending his record. Civil Beat reporter Chad Blair has today's reality check. Good morning.
Good morning, Bethann.
In some cases, it sort of asks the question of, or looks like we should be asking, who are the bad guys? Who are the ones who need rehabilitation? And it doesn't seem to be that's the question that we hear the prosecutor asking himself very much. He just seems to be the tough on crime guy.
Well, and it's worked very well, with the exception, of course, Peter Carlisle being a prosecutor for a number of years. And by the way, Peter Carlisle and Keith Kaneshiro do not see eye to eye when it
That's
comes
putting it mildly.
to how each has done their job as prosecutor. But Kaneshiro is up again for another 4-year term. His opponent is relatively unknown, Anash Yacoub. Hardly anybody is. We'll see what happens, but in all likelihood, Kaneshiro is looking at another term in office. But the critics have said, why is he so focused on stricter sentencing and making sure that bad guys, criminals, are put behind bars and less interested in maybe trying to rehabilitate people, get them back into society? Well, he just strongly feels that that is his job. Public safety is a key. He certainly has a long record, and Nick Ruby has a really nice piece up today detailing his accomplishments, where he fell short, and what he hopes to continue doing in office.
Because most people would say, well, you know, isn't that the job of the prosecutor to put away the bad guys? But for years and years, we've heard a lot of conversation coming from those who are involved with, you know, some social services, certainly those who would be involved with a prison reform and justice reform, that we don't focus enough on that as a society, let alone ask our prosecutor to do that. It seems like that is also a link that hasn't been, you know, well joined. And given, you know, the fact that we're probably going to be looking at another 4 years with Keith Kaneshiro, is there anything to suggest that those who are involved with some of those services and those who have been making a lot of those criticisms are, in fact, trying to build something a little different this time around with Keith Kaneshiro?
Well, I don't see him changing his positions necessarily. I will give you one example where he thinks he's doing something that does help change the system, and that's the establishment of this Honolulu Family Justice Center. It's going to open up shortly. It's designed to help victims of domestic violence and sexual assault and sexual trafficking, and this is a case where he thinks he's doing something good to help people. But critics also point out this is the very same guy that didn't want to change our law so that sex trafficking would be explicitly forbidden, prohibited. That is something that finally passed the legislature. Kaneshiro's view was, look, we already had this on the books. So even though he seems to be making a step forward in one area, others say, I wish he would work in other areas as well. He doesn't seem to have much sympathy for trying to help people. And as you know, as we've talked about so much in this program, we got way too many people in prisons here. And we need to find ways, particularly for nonviolent offenders, to get them out and return them to society. That's just not where Kaneshiro seems to have a lot of sympathy.
That's true. But we keep hearing that same refrain, and it sort of reminds me of second verse, same as the first. And it is getting worse. And the question is, are we going to really be willing to do anything about it? And we keep asking that one, too. For the moment, we got to go, but I will talk to you in the morning. Thanks, Chad.
Thanks, Beth Ann. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Chad Blair joins us every day from Civil Beat with a reality check.
Support for The Conversation comes from Maui Arts and Cultural Center, presenting Kumu Kahua Theater, Uchina Aloha, about a multi-generational Okinawan family in Hawaii. 7:30 this Friday and Saturday in the McCoy Studio Theater, MauiArts.org.
I'm Stephen Dubner. On the next Freakonomics Radio, what do you call someone trying to live his life strictly according to the rules of economics?
I call them econs for short.
And you'll hear what New Yorkers think of this mythical creature.
I'm tired. I came from work. Go away. Some random jerk.
That's next time on Freakonomics Radio.
Thursday evening at 7, following With Good Reason.
A week to go in a presidential election transformed by a bombshell. Last Friday, FBI Director James Comey sent a cryptic note to Congress disclosing the discovery of a new cache of emails. This time, the Democrats cried foul while Donald Trump campaign gained new life. A once comfortable Clinton lead in the polls has dwindled, and who knows what might happen next. News analyst Neil Conan joins us now from his MacNut farm in the Big Island, as he does most Tuesdays. Good morning.
Good morning, Beth.
Well, you know, we always hear about that October surprise, but I don't think anybody has quite experienced one like this one.
No, I don't think that. Yeah, you know, it's interesting when you think about it. October was a complete disaster for Donald Trump between, you know, the Billy Bush tape and the charges from a dozen women and his poor performances in the debates. Then, boom, it started with the bad news on Obamacare, premiums going up. But then the FBI finds. Well, actually, nobody knows what they found, but Director Comey felt compelled to announce that they might have found something. We may or may not find what that is before Election Day. This is extraordinary.
We do know, though, that the Attorney General and the Justice Department strongly advised Director Comey not to send that note. They thought that it, you know, violated longstanding policies not to appear to interfere in an election. So what do you make of this?
You know, I think we have to go back to that encounter on the tarmac last spring when former President Bill Clinton ran into Attorney General Loretta Lynch and they spent half an hour talking on her plane. This was an extremely bad idea. They say they did not discuss the email investigation, but, you know, the impression that they might have been talking about that caused Attorney General Lynch to recuse herself. So last July, instead of the Attorney General announcing there was no case to prosecute, the FBI director became the face of the investigation. He made the comment about what he called Secretary Clinton's extreme carelessness with classified information. And if you'll remember, that triggered a big shift in the polls before the convention. And then it was Comey who testified before Congress and took the heat from Republicans who demanded to know why he declined to prosecute. And that's when he said, you know, this investigation is over, but if anything comes up, I'll let you know.
Enter Anthony Weiner.
You know, Anthony, there are very few politicians who ought to have the word disgraced formally attached to their titles. Disgraced former President Richard Nixon, for example. In this case, I'm not sure disgrace goes far enough, but yes, disgraced former Congressman Anthony Weiner, the estranged husband of longtime aide Huma Abedin, as the FBI investigates charges that he sent lewd text messages to an underage girl. They find hundreds of thousands of his wife's emails, which, again, may or may not include classified information.
Okay, so let me see if I get this right. So even though he doesn't know what he's got, Director Comey decides that he's going to keep his promise to Congress. He has to know, though, that this is going to affect the election in some way. In fact, he said in the subsequent note to the FBI employees that he knew it would be open to misinterpretation.
A note to FBI employees that was leaked. You know, this is Washington, Beth Ann. If he didn't disclose the Aberdeen emails, he has to know that's going to be leaked and look like a cover-up. It leaked either before or after the election. It looks like he's protecting Secretary Clinton. Now, he can certainly be criticized for this decision, and he is being criticized. He can certainly be criticized for what he said or did not say in that note to Congress, and he is. But there's no question he was in a very tough spot, and we have to note here that he works for the Attorney General. Loretta Lynch could have ordered him not to send that note, and she let him go ahead.
Donald Trump seized on this as the smoking gun. You know, the news revivified his campaign. The polls we now see are tightening. Did the FBI actually tilt this race toward Trump in any sort of way?
I think maybe a little. And, you know, obviously we're going to find out a week from today. But I do not think that this changed the fundamental dynamics of the race. Since last July, when that big Clinton lead vanished just before the convention, we've been watching the polls oscillate. She was up double digits coming out of the conventions. That dropped back. She roller-coastered back up again after the first debate. Now, that's come back. You know, a lot of analysts think that what we're seeing here is two very unpopular candidates in a very divided electorate. Every once in a while, one of them becomes even more unpopular, and that candidate drops, not because any of their supporters switch to the other side, because their supporters get a little discouraged and tell pollsters, well, maybe they're not going to vote at all, maybe they're undecided. I don't really think there are many voters who are really undecided. I think one candidate is more unpopular than the other, and the fundamental dynamic of this election is a Clinton lead of about 4 or 5 points. Now, if a week from today she's on the upswing in that cycle, she's going to bring along enough Democrats to retake control of the Senate and diminish the Republican majority in the House. If she's on the downswing, control of the Senate could be a real nail bite.
Okay, but this FBI story is going to go, you know, drip, 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 like, you know, good marketing. Every single day it's going to be happening. That doesn't seem to be boding very well for an upswing.
No, it seems to me Director Comey is going to have to say something else, issue some sort of clarification. Obviously, he's under a lot of pressure to do that soon because millions of people are already voting.
The analysis of early voting shows that more registered Democrats have been voting in Nevada, North Carolina, and more Republicans in Ohio and Iowa. Is there any reliable way to be able to read this?
Well, yes and no. We have more information on North Carolina than we do anywhere else, so you can get into the weeds and see Hispanic turnout there is higher. African-American turnout is relatively lower, in part because some of the polling places have been closed. Now, obviously, you don't know how those votes were cast exactly, but you can make a good guess. What you really want to look at, though, is how the early turnout jives with the opinion polls. Do the early patterns do anything to change your assessment of the race? Now, something like 25 million people have voted already, and so far the pattern is holding. Like you said, maybe a little more Democratic in Nevada, maybe a little more Republican than expected in Ohio, but very broadly in line with what you'd expect from the polls. Now, another point, something like 40% of the vote this year is going to be cast before Election Day. And that's way, way more than ever before. And what we're seeing is also in line with the Democrats' ability to get their supporters out to the polls. Now, this is the so-called ground game, the get-out-the-vote effort, GOTV. That's the network of staffers and volunteers in small offices around the country who are contacting voters for months. They have very specific information about them. Now, this is the effort that Barack Obama pioneered 8 years ago and then years again 4 years ago. Hillary Clinton inherited some of that. She's built on it. Donald Trump has disdained this idea and put no effort into it at all. The Republican National Committee does have a GOTV operation, but it's significantly smaller than the Democrats, maybe on the order of 3-1. 2 weeks ago, it just looked like frosting on a big Democratic win. Right now, it looks like this is the hard work that's going to make the difference in some of these swing states.
Before we let you go, we just have some time here to be able to talk about this. I wanted to ask you about the collateral damage. You know, the FBI serves a 10-year term, so the job doesn't automatically come open after the election. But amid, you know, withering criticism from both Democrats and Republicans, does James Comey have to resign?
He might have to. He might. Comey is a Republican, but he is nobody's idea of a partisan. He clearly did not handle this as well as he might have. You can imagine that he would have a difficult relationship with either a President Clinton or a President Trump. that he will be seen as having politicized the Bureau. You know, the ghost of J. Edgar Hoover has been raised here, and he may decide that resignation is the best way forward to protect the FBI. More collateral damage, though. There was talk that a President Clinton might ask Attorney General Lynch to stay on if she's elected. That looks a little more problematical now. Donna Brazile, the acting chair of the Democratic Party, now according to WikiLeaks, those are stolen emails, but according to WikiLeaks, she sent questions from upcoming CNN debates to the Clinton camp back during the primaries when she was a analyst for CNN as a Democratic strategist. Now, Donna Brazile has been a pillar of integrity in the Democratic Party. Her reputation is now severely stained. And let's not forget Anthony Weiner. You know, more than a few Democrats were willing to give him a second chance because of his marriage. Huma Abedin is very widely respected. I don't know if you saw that documentary about him when he was trying to rehabilitate himself after the first texting scandal, but he's now lost everything. He may be the most despised politician in the country, which is saying something. He faces the prospect of serious prison time. Just a few years ago, he was the odds-on favorite to be the next mayor of New York. He brought all of this on himself. Now he's further embarrassed his wife. He may have cost his party the presidential election. It's hard to find any sympathy for Anthony Weiner, but you know, this is the stuff of tragedy.
It is indeed. Now, for the moment, we got to leave it there, Neil. We're just going to sit here and kind of wonder what could still happen in the week before the election. God knows. We're going to talk to you on Election Day.
Absolutely.
Thanks so much. News analyst Neil Conan joins us most Tuesdays from the farm. And, of course, he'll be back next Tuesday. You can also always hear his Pacific News Minutes right here on Hawaii Public Radio.
I'm Trey Takahashi from the Hawaii Social Media Training Institute. You're listening to The Conversation on HPR2, member-supported Hawaii Public Radio.
Helping people.
It made me feel good.
Taking care of.
It's just something that
I wanted to help.
Hi, everyone. This is Bob Wehrman. It's time for The Benevolent Mind, our quest to discover the spark that ignites giving. There are many heroes living among us. A kid named Skeeter was sent to fight in Vietnam. He was an 18-year-old teetotaling, bumbling, virgin Presbyterian tuba player. One day, he got trapped between barbed wire and a huge wall of fire. There was nothing he could do but run through the blaze. And he made it out, but he saw that a man was still trapped and the flames were whipping around him. There was no way he could survive. But Skeeter ran back into the inferno. He reached the man and started to drag him out when the enemy began shooting. But he kept going. By the time he cleared the flames, his hair was on fire. Still, he carried the burned man through a hail of bullets all the way to a chopper waiting to take them out. Skeeter is a hero and a philanthropist, for he offered the ultimate gift. Now, he lives on Maui, and who knows, you might meet him someday. Our program is a production of Hawaii Public Radio and is sponsored by the Hawaii Community Foundation, believing for 100 years that philanthropy is all about you.
It's tough to follow a story like that one, but we do have the answer to today's backyard quiz. Earlier today, we asked you to give us the Hawaiian name for a plant commonly used in modern-day homeopathic remedies. Specifically, it's a yellow-orange root of the plant that's often crushed into a powder or brewed into tea to help relieve joint inflammation, strengthen the immune system, reduce hypertension, and prevent infection. In India, the powder of the root is used to disinfect wounds, while in Hawaii, it was pounded and used as a treatment for afflictions of the sinuses or ears. With a resurgent interest in natural remedies, this root has become a common sight in many grocery stores. In Hawaiian, it's known as olena, but you may know it better as turmeric. That's the answer. And do we have a winner?
Yes, indeed. Cami Konoa Wong of Kailua got it right, and she'll be getting an HPR T-shirt. and at 8:48. That's today's quiz. If you've got a quiz for us, you can send it to us at talkback@hawaiipublicradio.org. There's a theme we've returned to a couple of times in recent conversations on this show, the restorative power of the land. Working on the land can itself become a kind of therapy, which is why operations like the La'akea Farm in Upper Paia, Maui, can be such an effective alternative to conventional therapies. The foundation works with both young people and adults with autism and intellectual disabilities in a community environment, growing organic produce and operating a farm stand. Andrea Hall Rogers is the executive director of the La'akea Foundation. She's on the phone with us from Maui. Good morning.
Morning, Chris.
Do you agree with that I just said about the restorative power of the land?
Absolutely. That's pretty much what started La'akea over here in Maui.
What's your facility like?
We have 12 acres in Paia on Baldwin Avenue, just 1 mile above the town of Paia.
Mm-hmm.
And we currently have a day program similar to Easter Seals, but we're doing it in an agricultural environment. So we have a contract with the Department of Health, and we have participants that both live in the community and come as part of the day program to work in our community environment.
Well, let's say somebody comes to live in your community. What's their first day with you like?
Well, you know, we have one group home, and then we also house three people in HUD apartments. And so each person has an individual plan that's set by the Department of Health. So we work on meeting their goals. So some of the time they may be on the campus, you know, doing agricultural projects. They may also be taking our classes. We have you know, yoga classes and qigong and aikido and art programs and you know, array of activities, as well as they may work in our farm store, and they may also be out in the community volunteering for Leilani Farms or working in other offices. We have one participant who lives with us that actually is working down at Milagro's restaurant in Paia now, one day a week.
So what would be, when you say that you set goals per individual, what's an example of such a goal?
Well, the way it works when a student graduates high school is they get Department of Health services, and they sit down with their guardian, the special needs person, the agency, which in this case would be La'akea Community, and the case manager, and they talk about goals for independent living. Some people have goals they want to earn a paycheck. Some people's goals are they want to be more physically fit. So, you know, if they choose La'akea to be their waiver provider, we work together to look at what are the goals of that individual. Some people want to be more belonging. You know, I would find the most common theme among our La'akea special needs participants is they want to feel truly included, and they want to feel like they have real friendships.
Which sounds like a pretty laudable goal for just about anybody. But it's all the more important for people like your residents, because they tend to be marginalized by society, don't they?
Right. Well, you know, it's an interesting thing because Hawaii passed a law in the 80s for self-determination. And there was a real trend in the country to kind of close institutional-type settings, sheltered workshops. But in my opinion, there wasn't a lot of thought put into what does that truly look like. And so, you know, what we find is a lot of people wandering around the mall because it's social. But is it really social?
No.
They don't have real friendships. There's not really any purpose in wandering around the mall with their paid support staff person. So what we did at La'akea said, well, what would it look like if we created a socially inclusive campus, meaning our campus is 1 mile from the town, 7 miles from the airport. We're on a major thoroughfare, Baldwin Avenue, and there's thousands of people stopping to shop at our farm store. Tourists come, and our crew are running the farm store, and they're having a meaningful social interaction with people on their turf, if you will, because they're comfortable in the community.
You raise an interesting point because, and you reminded me of, I think it was a work of sociology in the 50s called The Lonely Crowd. And you reminded me of that when you talk about people wandering around the mall, because I think that a lot of ways modern society creates the illusion of inclusion without any real inclusion of people in society. Do you see
exactly.
It that way?
Well, and that's what I found as executive director is what does real inclusion look like? And you know, if a gentleman who has intellectual disabilities, say, works at a hotel, mm-hmm. and, you know, he does his job really well, and then you go into the cafeteria at lunchtime and nobody's sitting with him.
Mm-hmm.
And I firsthand saw this in one of my former jobs, and I thought, you know, this is not inclusion.
Yeah.
And so what we've set out to do in La'akea is create an extremely social campus where, you know, we're in the process of building a commercial kitchen, we're expanding our country store, and we're creating a social atmosphere that's on our campus where our participants feel safe and independent and are having meaningful social interaction, but in an environment that is going to lend itself to real true friendships, real meaningful and productive work. And, you know, one of the things that's very unique to La'akea is we approach our services as what we call life sharing.
Mm-hmm.
And what I mean by that is we don't use the word client or staff anywhere in our organization. We have crew members, we have coworkers, we have participants, but we're looking to create a paradigm where the special needs person doesn't differentiate the staff or another special needs person. They're all the crew members. And they're on an equal playing field where every person's meaningful contribution is valued equally.
Do you see that? Do you see a different reaction in the demeanor of people who are treated that way?
Well, I mean, I do because I'm there living it at La'akea Community mm-hmm. on a daily basis. But I think that we just recently had one of our participants who was one of the five finalists in the Hawaii, the Weinberg Concert of the Stars,
mm-hmm.
and he played a Beethoven piece, and that will air on television, I believe, the day before Thanksgiving. And when he was being interviewed, he's a, you know, an autistic gentleman. He was talking about his friends at La'akea, and I noticed he listed participants and staff.
Without
he was talking about his friends.
Without needing to make that distinction. And as soon as you have categories like that, they do tend to isolate, don't they?
They do. And then, you know, how is a paid person really somebody's friend?
Yeah.
So even our group home, we have a licensed group home that we licensed about a year and a half ago, and it was the first licensed care home. It was called a domiciliary home on Maui since 1985. So there's been a real lack in services for the residential piece. And even our group home, we have a life-sharing approach to things where the bulk of the people that work in our home live there. That's their real life. They don't go home to their real life when their shift is over. And, you know, the goal being if you live there, you're going to plant the flower garden at the house you live. You're not going to clock in and clock out and plant the flower garden, you know, away from the group home.
It makes good sense, Andrea. And thanks very much for talking with us this morning.
Sure.
Andrea Hall Rogers is the executive director of the La'akea Foundation. The 6th annual La'akea Family Fall Festival is Sunday, November 6th, at the La'akea Farm in Upper Paia, Maui. And you can find out more on our Hawaii Conversation Facebook page.
Support for Hawaii Public Radio comes from the National Kidney Foundation of Hawaii, striving to increase awareness and treatment of kidney diseases affecting 1 in 7 Hawaii residents. Learn more at kidneyhi.org.
Neil Conan brought up the specter of J. Edgar Hoover that hovers over the recent discussions coming out of the FBI. And for those of us who aren't as old as I am, Hoover had files on 6 successive presidents under whom he served and basically used them to maintain his position. Interesting parallels.
Some interesting parallels, but really looking to the future. some perhaps very big changes coming in institutions that we thought were you know, reasonably okay up until not that long ago, and watching some people's reputations who we thought were, you know, I won't say sterling, but at least something of substance, yeah, looking at it as being now completely in tatters too.
Few
not
things
a good
are
situation.
As they seem. Yeah.
No, they're not. But we're going to talk about something that is, and that is the Electoral College. Tomorrow, Neil Milner will give us the long view. And if there are seniors in your life, you may know the cost of living adjustment in the 2017 Social Security benefit isn't much. We're going to look at a pair of reports from the National Committee to Preserve Social Security and Medicare.
And we'll hear the rich sonorities of the cello live in our studio.
You can call our talkback line and leave us your comments at 808-792-8217.
Past shows are under Talk Shows for the Conversation on HawaiiPublicRadio.org. I'm Chris Vandercook.
I'm Beth Ann Koslovich. We'll see you in the morning with more of The Conversation.